Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
No credentials. Reviewing Rolling
Stone 500 greatest album.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Sound Logic Podcast. We're glad you're with us. We are ready to get a bit more Canadian content. Today we're discussing album number 95, which is Take Care by Drake.
And not only is this a Canadian artist, but he's a Canadian artist who grew up in the city that we're from, or at least the city that we grew up near. We didn't grow up
in the six.
In Toronto, in the, repping the six, my man Dreezy, and my wife and my kids really cringe hard when I say that Dreezy's my guy. Because I'm a 40-year-old
from the Degrassi years, right?
Yeah. Well, and I didn't watch that. No, because that was the new class, right?
Right. The rewatch.
In the early 2000s, and we were already not in high school anymore, so I wasn't watching that. So that's not... for me. Aubrey Graham.
Drake Graham.
I think that's what it would have been. Anyways, listen, I think we should just dive into some details first. You want to do that?
Well, so yes, no. Because details are important in an album that I know so little about.
But okay.
before we get to the music today, I've been a little bit overwhelmed with just how big of an artist Drake is in going through some of this information this week leading up to this. So here's a couple of really fascinating things that I found. In 2018, Drake was reportedly responsible for 5% of Toronto's $8 billion annual tourism dollars.
Come on. Like
personally responsible based on all of the different things that he's involved in.
Really?
That is crazy to me to think about that.
I don't even understand how that works.
Single person drawing that many people to the city.
What are we talking about? Like concerts or like the Raptors?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was thinking, like, I read that as like, oh, Drake's from Toronto. We should go check that out. Like that kind of like a...
Oh!
That much of a magnet.
Oh, how would you even record that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you like figured that out. But anyway, that's in Wikipedia, so it's got to be true.
Okay, got to be true.
He is among the world's best-selling music artists. 170 million records sold. The highest certified digital singles artist in the United States, highest of all time, which is also crazy to me. That in the sort of digital era, digital singles highest. Of any other artist. He's won countless awards and sort of the Grammys, Music Awards, Billboard Music Awards, Junos, things like that. But in addition, in this sort of like internet era that we are living in, he has also been able to dominate the charts in some pretty amazing ways. The most charted songs, 294 charted songs. That seems amazing to me.
Wow.
Most simultaneous charted songs in 1 week with 27 charted songs in 1 week. The most Hot 100 debuts in 1 week with 22. The most continuous time on the Hot 100 with 431 weeks. I guess that's all different music there. And the most number one singles on the R&B hip-hop airplay, hot R&B hip-hop songs, hot rap songs, and rhythmic airplay charts. So, like, I knew Drake was from our home area. I knew he was a big deal. You know, he's the global ambassador for the Toronto Raptors. He owns a soccer team now, I think. He owns OVO Sound, which is a record label, and they've branched out into OVO clothing and merchandise. I think Gretzky's a model for Drake's OVO wear. So I knew he was a big deal, but I don't think I realized just how much success he has for an artist that I know almost nothing about the music side of who he is.
Okay.
Really, really huge in a way. Like, yeah, and even like this album we're about to dive into, most of the tracks on it are at least at 100 million listens on Spotify, and some are closing in on half a billion listens, which is unreal. I think that's a good table setter for any missteps that we take for the rest of this episode in talking about that's, this music.
That's cool that you, yeah, I think I have come to that realization maybe a few years ago. Like, I didn't realize I'm glad you brought up the listens, because often when we're talking about albums and tracks, you'll quote the number of listens on Spotify. And as you were talking, not from this album, but just how big Drake is, his single God's Plan from the Scorpion album has 2.2 billion listens on Spotify, and One Dance, which I believe is with Rihanna, from his Views album, 2.65 billion with the B listen. So just like, yeah, just so popular.
Not just Canadians.
Globally.
There are artists that are beloved in Canada and lifted up and elevated there, but no, he's really a global,
everywhere
global artist. Yep.
Okay. That's cool, man. Well, I think we can talk about that a little more later and kind of your, how you approach this.
Yeah.
I'm a little more familiar with it, but I wouldn't say very much.
Okay.
So let's do some details first. So this album is Take Care, his second studio album, released November 15, 2011. I believe his first was just the year before. And the reason that's really significant this time, the first thing I want to talk about, we talked about who wrote it. Well, this was written, he's a co-writer on most of the tracks. I think he co-produces a lot of the tracks. The number of collaborators on this album and the popularity of those artists, both performing artists and producers, is staggering. So here's who's on this album. Chantal Kurviacic, which I don't know how popular she is outside of Canada. She's a very well-known artist, but she is an extremely prolific songwriter. She's written hits for just about everybody. Mm-hmm. So she was on this. Lil Wayne, The Weeknd, another guy from Toronto, Rick Ross, Rihanna, Birdman, Kendrick Lamar, Nicki Minaj, Just Blaze, T-Minus, Andre 3000, Trey Songz, and even Stevie Wonder. That's who's...
Amazing.
Those are the people who appear on this album. And not only is that impressive, that reminds me of Kanye's My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, where his sixth album, fifth or sixth album, and he had tons of money and he just flew people out to Hawaii to record, a part of a song. But this is Drake's second album. And so his first album and his touring and his publicity was so good, and people just latched on. This is the kind of pull this guy has on his second album. I found that very impressive.
Yeah.
And really cool to hear these other artists. It went to number one in the US and Canada, of course. Went to number two in the UK. Sales to date are approaching 7 million worldwide. This is only a 12-year-old album. Not even 12 years yet. It debuted at number one on the Billboard 200, sold 631,000 copies in the first week. He released 7 singles.
It's amazing.
Between June 28th, 2011, so that's like 4 months before the album came out. So he had 1, 2, three singles before the album came out. Marvin's Room, Headlines, Make Me Proud. Then just after it came out, he released The Motto. I'll talk about that in a second. Take Care with Rihanna, HYFR, and Crew Love. So he releases seven singles. So The Motto actually initially was a digital release, wasn't on the album, was on the deluxe release.
Okay.
And I guess I'll talk about it now. Culturally, The Motto is where we first get YOLO.
Really?
Yep. So we have Drake to thank for it. Now, we don't have Drake to thank for the phrase "you only live once," because that was something that's been around for a long time. In fact, the actress from the Golden Age, Mae West, was one who used to say that. But to make it an acronym and make it popular, much to the chagrin of probably middle school teachers everywhere, we have Drake to thank for that. According to Billboard, as of 2022, Take Care is one of the 15 best performing 21st century albums without any of its singles being number one hits on the Billboard Top 100. I know that's a mouthful, but so it's the best 15, one of the best 15 best performing albums in the 21st century that didn't have a number one hit single on Billboard. So we talk about the success of this album, the success of Drake, but none of these songs, even though the album went, none of the songs went to number one. So that's, I'm not going to dig any more into that, you know, what other songs were out, but interesting. Also, won the Grammy Award for Best Rap Album at the 55th Grammys. That would have been, I guess, in 2012. The rest of the details are fairly technical in terms of, you know, the recording and where, and we don't need to hash on that. We talked about, you know, just kind of the big impact this makes. We'll go next to the album cover, unless you have anything else.
No, I think that's good.
Okay. It's a photograph. Look it up if you're not familiar. It's a photograph. It's mostly a picture. Drake is sitting down at a table. The colors, overwhelming prominent colors, are gold and brown and black. You know, symbolic of wealth, possessions, austerity. He's sitting, looks like, at a corner table. Could be a restaurant, could be an art gallery. There's two pieces of art, again, with gold frames. He's got his hands kind of, his arms folded in front of him. One hand's on almost like a gold, almost like goblet. He's mm-hmm. got a gold chain. He's got a gold bracelet. Next to the goblet is a little golden figurine of an owl. And that's his symbol, if you don't know. Drake has a symbol. It's an owl. You'll see it on a lot of his albums, on merchandise. And then beside that is a golden candlestick with a very tall tapered candle that's lit. And the table is also has like a black velvet tablecloth on it. And it doesn't say Drake anywhere on the cover, but in the bottom left, where it's just the black table, in almost cursive gold writing, "Take Care." I don't know if that candlestick is supposed to be a a suggestive reference to anything else.
Who knows?
I didn't on a skim didn't find any info on this. I don't know if you came across anything, Ben. And he's not looking at the camera; he's looking down, like at his cup. But to me, this kind of speaks to, again, austerity, wealth, possessions,
yeah,
fame, success, right? And that,
I think so.
One of the first line is about in the album is about, you know, overdosed on confidence. He's never shied away from his ego. You know, which is not uncommon for hip hop, but he's you know, been very open about it, and it's part of his persona, and I see that here. The other thing that comes to mind, without having any direct symbols, Drake has been very open about his background. One of his parents is Jewish, so he's open about his Jewish heritage. And I almost get a sense here of that, just some of the how ornate things are that reminds me of some different Jewish table settings. But I could be totally off on that. But I got a sense that he was pulling some of that symbolism or just some of that atmosphere in. I don't know about, there's a painting in the back. I'm not even sure exactly what it is. So it could be a reference there too. Anyways.
Yeah.
Sorry, I spoke a lot about that. Did you have any takeaway from this?
Well, I was, you know, we've talked frequently that we're not lyrics first people. I thought in the track Lord Knows that he says Hefner and Jordan are my only role models, and I thought, oh, maybe this is like lavish Hugh Hefner style,
sure, yeah, you know,
Michael Jordan's lavish mansion. But it's apparently Hoffa and Jordan, who are two of his Toronto friends, so disregard that when you're looking at it. But you know, I got that one wrong. This is a apparently a real Toronto restaurant called Joso's.
Cool.
And Drake has said he wanted to have an image that embodied how he was feeling at the time, which was, I used to be the kid standing outside of the high-end restaurant or high-end club, staring in the window wishing I was in there. Now I'm there sitting at the table and I'm not really sure what to do with myself. I've arrived, got what I've always wanted, and now what? And I think there is that, like, sort of contemplative, he doesn't look happy in this image. He looks like he's still puzzled about what comes next. And
contemplative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just trying to figure it out, but living in that wealth, at least to some extent.
right.
I mean, it's a cool image, and I find, like, sophomore albums, you know, are hit and miss. We talk about the sophomore slump. A lot of people, you know, try to recreate themselves and it falls flat, or try and do the same thing and it falls flat. Mm-hmm. And even sometimes, you know, the album cover, the artwork depicts something that's really not, this is what I got from the first album. This is because, again, people just don't know what to do with the success.
Yeah, exactly. I too find myself, though, wondering a bit more about the symbols. Like, what are those paintings?
Yeah.
Why is everything gold? Was it intentional to have, like, I don't know, part of the painting looks like it's kind of growing out of his head. Was that an intentional move by the photographer?
I mean, the owl is intentional. The owl is intentional, obviously.
But, sure.
Know about anything else.
Yeah.
Anyways, cool photo. Look it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
A large, in terms of tracks, it's 18 tracks, 19 if you have the deluxe, or even 20, I think, on some releases. Well over an hour of music.
Yeah, an hour 23. Amazing.
Yeah, and that includes the motto. So a big album for sure. So Ben, you've already referenced that you're not very familiar with Drake at all.
Yeah.
And you even made a comment off the record a week or two ago that you weren't looking forward to it or weren't really into it at the time.
Yeah.
So all that to say, what were kind of your expectations of this? And then when you started, what was kind of some of your first reactions to it?
I really wanted to like this, I think, because of the Canadian connection. And didn't really get drawn in as much as I'd hoped. It's interesting that you referenced Kanye in the way that Kanye builds albums, because what I do really love about this album is the production, the sampling, the tone that he's created in the studio, the sound. I don't love his voice, especially when he's rapping. I actually kind of like it a bit more when it gets a bit more musical and singing. And it reminds me a lot of Kanye in that way, where we've both said, wow, he's an incredible producer. Like, I almost wish he wouldn't sing quite as much. or I wish he wasn't as in the front as he is sometimes. And I've got the similar kind of vibe from Drake. There's all kinds of people out there trying to talk through who he is as an artist. And a number of people mentioned that he's not coming at the rap and hip-hop scene with a tough guy attitude. And some people have speculated that he's trying to create music that is more accessible for those who don't identify. Thanks, Pepper. For those who don't identify with as much of the machismo or like really in your face kind of rap and hip hop, and that women might be more drawn to the way that Drake writes. Some people have speculated that he's writing words that they wish their man would use. And I don't know if there's part of me that doesn't fit in with that audience, or doesn't connect in that way that whoever he's aiming for when he's writing this music. But I don't know. I feel like I'm grasping at reasons why I don't resonate with this, and maybe what I should just say is like it doesn't do much for me, aside from some hooks and some parts that feel catchy or enjoyable from time to time. I'm slightly disappointed.
A great start.
Yeah.
I was actually surprised I knew a few of the tracks, because looking at the track list, I was like, I don't think I'll know any of this. And then I did know some of it, not much. However, this usually doesn't happen. The album sounded kind of how I thought it would.
Mm.
Like, you know, I know...
Based on the singles, you know.
Yeah, and just his style in general. Now, I don't want to say that his style hasn't changed and evolved over the years, but he has a very unique style of rapping, you know, the auto-tune and singing. He has a nice voice. You know, I agree with you. I do like his singing voice as well. But that kind of modulated even the rhythm. I think that's very uniquely his. Don't quote me on that, because I don't want to sit here and say he was the first, but I think that he was very unique with his first album. Maybe that's one of the reasons he got so much attention. And we hear it here too. So that's kind of what I expected. I will say this, over the past few years, occasionally I'll have an evening where I just want to listen to some Drake. And I think Nora, my wife, has listened to more Drake over the years. I don't want to say growing up, because he didn't come out till well after we were married and had kids. So it has nothing to do with her upbringing and where she grew up. But she grew up close to the city in Scarborough, a suburb, or a borough, I guess. And when I have listened to even some of his albums, I'm going to listen to some of this album. You know, I know this song, I listen to that, listen to the whole album, and then listen to this one. I've had a similar experience where I really, really like the hits, the singles, whether there's two or three or four.
Yeah.
And I'm really not grabbed by any of the other tracks. We've listened to a few albums, I think some Stones albums, some other songs, where it's like, man, these singles are like absolutely dynamite. And I really don't care for the rest of the album.
I read another review that was talking about, like, you know, with an album with this many singles, is sort of amazing, but like seven of these 18 tracks, like, what if he had just filled it out as like a 45 minute album, maybe had 10 or 11 tracks, seven singles and three others? Like, I think there would have been something kind of, I'm sure that there was a concept in his head and a reason he made it this long, but it'd be almost like Thriller-esque in the way that, like, you know, you'd know every song if you're familiar with him. And I think that's a fascinating kind of angle. I don't always think that's in the forefront of an artist's mind. They you know, they know what they want and they're going to go for it, especially when they've got as much charisma and swagger as Drake does.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was kind of, I kind of hate to say that at the beginning of the review, but taking a page from your book, I guess. So, yeah, like, that being said, I think I've listened to a few of the tracks quite a lot, because there's a few that I really, really like. I will say this, I've said it before, we've had conversations before the and we didn't really talk about it much. We recently talked about Missy Elliott, Super Duper Fly. I think it's a little more prevalent here, listening to a whole album where the N-word is used a lot still makes me uncomfortable. It's just, again, I know it's not for me, it's not meant for me. It's still just hard to process. I'm certainly not going to sing along.
Right.
Even by myself, it just doesn't feel right. So that makes it, all that to say, it just still is a challenge when I'm listening to music, especially when I'm listening to a whole album.
Yeah.
Which is too bad, because a part of me wants to kind of get over it. Like, okay, this is a part of this artist, their expression. It's part of a culture. You know, that I'm not a part of, and that's okay. But at the same time, you know, I'm listening to it and it's like, I feel like I shouldn't. I mean, it's language that is never used in my day-to-day life.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, does it matter that he's Canadian? Like, I don't know. It's kind of funny to say that, but like, I think that the way that the N-word has been embodied makes me assume, maybe poorly, more embraced in the United States and black culture here. I think I wonder, like, what is a Canadian benefiting from that word in particular? But I also am aware that black culture, African American identity, doesn't necessarily have borders. That, you know, I'm pretty sure I remember having a similar kind of conversation with some black people in South Africa when I was there 2 decades ago now, as a study abroad time too. So yeah, it's an interesting conversation. And any of our listeners who missed our conversation with Daryl, when we talked about that, I guess initially with Kanye, is that where we began, or was it Kendrick?
Started with Kanye.
Yeah.
And then he joined us again, you know, a couple albums later for Kendrick.
Yeah. I thought, he really did help me kind of understand where he was. And even the disagreement within the black community, too, about where that word stands currently and should stand. I was thinking this week as I was listening to this music, I was also finding myself, like you were, kind of bristling a little bit and wondering, like, how will history judge this word and this moment? There's been a lot of work over the last few years at breaking down some of the black minstrel tropes that continue to linger in some things, the white gloves that Mickey Mouse wears and the cat in the hat, and how that has to do with blackface. And I wonder sometimes if the N-word is going to be seen someday as like, ooh, that was an odd moment where we kind of held on to something and maybe a little longer than we should, or if it will just always be, you know, tied to an ethnic group trying to define who it is and claiming a word with some power.
The reclamation of it.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to pass. I'm not going to speak to any of that. I just don't.
White dude.
I don't think my voice is needed there. I think you did a great job, and I think you have a lot more experience having conversations in those spaces than I do with some of the work you've done in your city. So I'm just going to leave it at that. I'm not going to talk about the Canadian thing either, although it does feel a little different. But I mean, we take a lot of our culture, all of it, from our neighbors to the south.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, that's not surprising, and I don't think it would be uncommon to hear that language downtown Toronto, in those communities. So, anyways, it's just something that I can't ignore when I listen to music like this. But for the most part, I don't want to let it kind of dissuade me from experiencing, you know, someone's art. Experiencing the music. Where was there, I guess, now before we start talking about more stuff, why don't we do our favorite tracks?
Okay.
Because I find it can get repetitive if we talk about that and then pick our favorite tracks. So we have a playlist on Spotify. It's called SoundLogic Favorites. We pick two tracks from every album. You can listen to it in order, you can shuffle it. We're delighted if you listen to it at all. So Ben, do you have a favorite track from this album?
I do. I think if I had to pick one, I would be the first track. And I'm picking it because it's kind of a prime example of my tension with this album. I love the minor key and the sort of ethereal voice that comes in and sings at the beginning, and could listen to a whole album in that style. And when Drake comes in to kind of add his verse to it, I feel like it's fine, but doesn't do much to make it better for me.
Okay.
I still really like that song, and maybe because I've pushed play on this album and heard that one the most, as the opening track, but that's what I'm going to go with. And for those reasons, I think it kind of symbolizes something about this album for me.
Cool. And I think that's the track that Chantal Kraviatschuk's on. I think that's
her voice? Oh, good.
I think that's her vocal.
Double and, Canadian.
And piano as well.
Okay.
It's, I don't even have to think about my answer here. It's Headlines for sure. I've listened to it so many times since preparing. when I open it up to listen to the album, I always listen to that one first, even though it's the third track, and then I'll listen to everything else. I love
at this point. Do you know
I do I do. Mikey's got the money, so Mikey's gonna pay.
Perfect.
It's just something they know. I love the tempo of it. I love the pace of it, the pacing of it, the rhythm of it. The lyrics are fun. And again, it's, you know, it's exploring his wealth, his success, his ego. And, you know, as much as we look down sometimes on artists who do that, you know what? You're there, so why not? And it's a lot of fun. And it was one that when I was like, oh, was that a single to another song? And I pushed play and I was like, I definitely heard this.
Definitely heard it.
I've heard this for sure. Which actually brought me to a question. Was there anything that you recognized? Like, what about the title track with Rihanna? Did you recognize that?
I don't know. I recognized Headlines more than that. That refrain.
Oh, okay.
Might be the one thing that kind of stands out for me. I like that Take Care track, and actually I've been saying a lot of negative things. I like Rihanna's presence on that song. I like his voice playing off of Kendrick's in the little interlude.
Yeah, that's fun, eh? And this is, I think this is before Kendrick's debut.
Oh, is it? Wow.
I think it is. I think his, was that Mad City? Was that his first album?
It might have been.
Yeah.
And then I also really like Nicki Minaj. Her presence on here is kind of an interesting, like, an adjustment to the sound of the rest of the album. some different kind of attitude. But yeah, it's fun to see. Maybe my biggest disappointment is that I can't really hear much of Stevie Wonder on the track where he apparently added some harmonica.
It's one little solo.
Yeah.
So cool though. Yeah. Like, yeah. Come on.
To get all that.
And then what about the motto? You didn't listen to it every day.
I'm sure that hook has been on like at a sporting event or something that I've been at, but I had no concept that it was Drake. And just listening to it again now in my headphones, I don't think it was something I would have been able to even pick out. Yeah, boy, it really just reminds me of like how much more of a musical world there is out there that I'm.
Oh man,
that is so popular, and that I'm not at all connected to.
and then sometimes when I just listen to quote what I want or what's comfortable or what's natural, and then I come back to us doing this project and listening to things, way I do the same thing where I go, holy smokes, I am. As much as I like to say I feel like I listen to a lot of music and I'm knowledgeable and sometimes I'm a little proud of it, and then I'll be listening to just my stuff, quote,
right,
and then move. Man, I am quite limited in what I listen to and even on what my taste is, and I think a lot of people would say that. Probably a lot of people a lot more limited, like I only listen to blues, I only listen to country, I only listen to hip hop and R&B. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Just it is a good reminder that there's just so much out there. But yeah, every once in a while, like every maybe 6 months, I need like a Drake fix. And I'll just spend like a whole evening just sifting through his songs. I don't know what it is. Is it
just put it on shuffle, or is there an album of his in particular that you?
Okay. No, it's just you know, YouTube or Spotify, like just shuffle the hits.
Yeah,
you know, like if there was a Drake Greatest Hits album, there might be that I'm just ignorant to. Like I would love that, as much as we've talked about. You know, compilation albums, but like there's some artists we've been talking about, there's some artists where it's like that's kind of what we want,
yeah, and all it's we like, want maybe
yeah, yeah, like
Green Day is one that I think that about for some reason, like I know so many of their singles and don't really need the rest of the album.
The Rolling Stones,
the Stones, yeah, absolutely.
We've listened to some Stones albums where I've like I think Exile was one for me that like
Yep.
Tumbling Dice, and there might have been one other, and yep. I was just yep. not into the rest, you know. So, anyways, we've got to be careful. We're going on major bunny trails here, owl trails. So I think, I guess, you know, kind of concluding thoughts from me on the album as a general that there were only some tracks that were exciting to me.
Okay. Could have been shorter. It's like the White Album, huh? Just a little
bit. It's not even but like if you took away, you know, if there's like three or four tracks that I love and you took away, you know, nine tracks, so it's a 10-track album, there's still six tracks that I don't really care for.
Yeah.
You know, like it's still over 50%. Yeah, and again, I want to say, I've said this on other ones, I didn't hate it. Yeah. Like I didn't hate it. I liked it. I thought it was good. I enjoyed it, but just most of it wasn't exciting and didn't grab me and didn't. And what you said, you know, there wasn't a connection. I didn't mm-hmm. relate to a lot of it. So that being said, I'll probably listen to it again, or at least some of the songs. I'll definitely keep listening to Drake.
Yep.
Yep. I had no problem. You know, and as I was looking through kind of his discography, we'll talk about. You know, if we're going to talk about him again or not, but like he's keeps pumping out albums, like he's a busy guy, you know, and yeah, anyways, I'll stop. Any, do you have anything else to add before we kind of get to some of our concluding actions here?
You know, we've talked a number of times about artists paying tribute to, or not necessarily paying tribute to, but borrowing from another artist. Though in Take Care of the line, it's my birthday, and I don't even know what all the things that
get high if I want
to. Get high if I want to. You know, pays homage or is stolen from. It's My Party, which is a 1963 track by Leslie Gore. I just find that so fascinating that that song has held on and held on in cultural understanding that it immediately pops at what he's registering with.
Yeah. Even right away, I knew it. I was like, oh, wow, that's a neat interpolation there.
What is that? Like a 70-year-old song or something like that. Still, gets dropped here in a Drake song. Fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm glad we dug into this one, and I'm glad I do know a little bit more about this Canadian icon. We spent all that time reminiscing about Gordon Lightfoot the other day, and you know, Gordon never sold as many albums as this guy.
No.
So maybe I should know a bit more about Drake than I do, and I'm glad to have gone on this journey here. And fortunately, it's not going to be the last time either. We'll get to that.
Yeah. Okay, so this is only a 12-year-old album. what has aged well, what has not? I've actually got something for this, if you don't mind.
Yeah, dive in. I'm at a bit of a loss because it is so new. Well, it doesn't feel dated to me in any way, but maybe you've got something here.
I have a major point and a couple minor points. So a couple minor points is that the music is still fairly relevant because it's still fairly current. Maybe some of the sounds, you know, the program snare sound might be a little different than what we use now.
Ooh, snare.
It's all programmed, right? And that changes from time to time. Like, oh, you know, in the 2000s, it was like this. And in the 2010s, it changed a bit. It was a little more high-pitched. I don't know. Something like that. Something that people who are in that understand better than I do. I think his style of rapping might be... I mean, I want to say it might be a little tired because it's so unique and he hasn't changed it. That being said, he's still releasing massive hits. So I wouldn't really say that. I think the big thing, when you release, whether it be intentionally or unintentionally, when you release a song and something in it becomes a catchphrase, it can be a blessing and a curse.
Yep.
So, I mean, YOLO, you know, was everywhere for a while. And now it's like, if you said YOLO, you're probably lame. Or it's like, oh my God, my dad says that. You're so lame, right? So like, so that would probably be the only thing, you know, or the main thing that's like, there's probably people of a certain age, you know, rolling their eyes going, oh, you're so old, nobody says that anymore. You know, like stuff like that, right? So that would be the only thing. But like, I don't know that he or anybody does something in a song saying this is going to be a cultural touchstone.
No,
this is going to be, you know, like, I don't think anybody does that on purpose. I don't think he did that on purpose. And it's just something that stuck. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it can be cool at the time. And then later on it can be like, oh, I wish I'd never done that. You know,
so that
would be the only thing for me. Anything for you? I mean, you said, you know, it's still quite recent. Like,
yeah, no, I don't think so. I don't think if this album came out tomorrow that people would be saying, oh, that sounds like it was made a decade ago.
Yeah, but I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
In that sense. This is album number 95, 95th best album of all time. How do you feel about that ranking, Ben?
Boy, I don't think I have ever felt so conflicted about this question. Because
forever?
I've always...
No, not even in the Highway 61 Revisited?
No, because I can see why people like that. I can see why they think Dylan's great when that needle drops. I just don't think he's that great. And in this case, I don't see what makes this exceptional compared to other... I shouldn't say I don't see what makes this exceptional. I know why it's good. I can hear the goodness in it. I have no idea why these tracks get 500 million listens. And that's the stumbling point for me. If this was a Beatles album with half a billion listens, I could say, aha, yes. I hear it's good. I can hear why people would think it's good. And it deserves its ranking because it's obviously great. Look at how many other people think so. I am having a hard time connecting with this, and I guess I struggle to see why it is as popular as it is. And I think that means I'm missing something here. There's greatness here that I am not perceiving is maybe a much more succinct way to put it. And I think it probably needs to be higher. If Drake is as big as he, as we opened the episode in explaining and hitting at a cultural moment like he is, it feels sort of low to have an album this big placed this far down the list.
Right.
But I would never, I wouldn't hear this without seeing those Spotify listens and the accolades and think it's got to be higher. I would probably say, why is it this high? If it was right. Just me. So yeah, this is a tough one for me. Torn. Maybe that's my answer. help me see through some of that haze.
Yeah. Okay.
It's going to be good. We've, I can tell.
We've encountered this before where we feel like the influence of the artist is far more significant than potentially the influence of this one album.
Okay. Yep.
I feel like that in this case where he has, like, he majorly has influenced hip hop. Like, many people have emulated his style over the last decade.
I think he even says that in the album.
Yeah. and he has been, you know, extremely successful, not only in music, but in many different in business ventures. So his impact is huge. I mean, you said, you know, 5% of the tourist revenue, I think, is because of one guy, you know? So, I I'm cynical that sometimes albums are here because, you know, I know it's a little closer to when this list came out, but I would have thought that 2018 Scorpion might be on this list, number one and higher, you know, because it's a massive album, or even Views, neither of which are on this list. Should it be top? Should this album be top 100? I don't know. Struggle with that a little bit. Drake as an artist, yes. Drake as an artist, like, cool. But now, if you compare this, like this one, 7 million copies. His debut, which came out the year before this, is like around 2 million copies.
Okay.
So we could see a huge difference. Like this, he was already, you know, critically acclaimed, well known in the industry. After his first album, but this really exploded. He reached new heights. I don't know. I do feel like it's a little high.
Okay. All right.
And I do struggle with, you know, is it this album or is it him as an artist? I don't know. Anyways. On that note, you know, we do like to talk about other albums. There's one other album. If you're reading this, it's too late, from 2015. It's number 367. And that is a mixtape. It's not a true studio album.
Okay.
So I don't know exactly what a mixtape is these days. Like, I think, I don't know. What is the definition?
I don't know, but we'll find out in a few years.
So that's, it's not even like a true studio. I think it's very collaborative. Sometimes is some covers. We're musical fans. We're big Hamilton fans. I don't know if I think your daughter might be a Hamilton fan as well.
Mm-hmm.
Musical Hamilton, and they released, you know, the Hamilton mixtape. and it was artists doing their versions of songs, and also songs inspired by the musical, or like,
okay,
would you know, there'd be one line from the musical or from one song, and then they would branch out into a different song, like that was inspired by that, or different verses. So that's kind of my best experience. There's people who are familiar with the hip hop genre who are probably screaming at their devices right now because we don't know, us two dumb dumbs don't know what a mixtape is. But anyway,
yeah, that it makes will it be yeah,
down the I, road.
Yep. Yeah, I was gonna say another probably foolish thing. Like, it makes me think demo, like before he got big.
No, but
it,
no, no, no,
it
no.
Comes
no,
after. So
not what it is
not
at all.
That.
Not yeah. That. So anyways, we'll talk about Drake one more time. But yeah, I would have thought that some of like Views, you know, or the first song I remember hearing Drake was Started From the Bottom, Now We're Here. And that was on the album after this one.
Okay.
And that was a huge track. So like, that's not even on the list. So anyways, we'll talk about that in a number of years. I think that's it for this one, unless you have anything else to add, Ben.
No, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Again, I'm glad we gone on with it, and yeah. Boy, we sure are getting closer to that 100 albums mark here.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us what we've got coming up next week? Switch genres again.
We do. As usual. this is going to be a significant one for me, quite an opposite swing from one that I knew almost nothing about to one that I have been playing for a good 20 years on a semi-regular basis. This is right. REM's Automatic for the People at the 96th spot.
As always, until that time, we hope you continue to be well. We hope you take care of yourselves and those around you, those important to you. And of course, we hope you'll join us again right here on the SoundLogic podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.